Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Oh, it is.
It is.
The Alex Dono Show here on 560 WQAM. Streaming all over the internet, WQAM.com on your computer, or listen to us on your smartphone on the radio.com app. However you listen, we appreciate your patronage here tonight. And if you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560. Pound 560 on your cell, or you can get at us on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line at 56022, but please do not text and drive. Interesting conversation that Hockman and Crowder were having earlier in their show about Pat Riley. You know, Hawk was all in with the idea that, you remember the summer of 2014 when Riley gave his State of the Heat address, you know, the speech that he gives, the news conference he gives, every year, you know, a week or so or a few days after the Heat season is over. And in the case of 2014, that happened after the NBA Finals when you got steamrolled by San Antonio 4-1 in that five-game series. And that happened to be the summer that a month later, LeBron James would leave to go back to Cleveland. So Pat Riley, you'll remember in that presser, he clearly was challenging LeBron James. If you've got the guts, don't go out that first door. Let's come back and do this again, right? Rather than coddling him, talking about how much I love him, how great he is, Riley took more the route of, I dare you to stay here. I challenge you to stay here, and let's man up and get this done and fix this together. And in hindsight, you know, hindsight always being 2020, right? Hindsight, maybe it looks like, oh, maybe he could have had a better chance of keeping LeBron had he approached it in a more coddling, subservient manner, right? Like a Maverick Carter, Rich Paul, your mom, your wife, your buddies, I'm going to give them carte blanche with the organization. They can sit wherever they want to at games. They have full access to the facility 24 hours a day. We're going to give them jobs here the way Dan Gilbert has done with some of LeBron's people. You know, rather than bending over backwards and conceding power and conceding access to LeBron, Pat Riley went about it in more of an alpha male way. And, you know, Channing maintains that Riley handled that 100% correctly. Hockman kind of laments the fact that Riley wasn't more coddling towards LeBron and maybe LeBron would still be here, which kind of makes me think and wonder. 25 years with the organization, do you think Riley has regrets? What's Pat Riley's biggest regret as president of the Miami Heat? 56022 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. I don't think that's his biggest regret. Far from it. In fact, I think for Pat, when he made that speech, when he made that State of the Heat address and throughout, you know, the final year of LeBron in Miami, when things were starting to sour a little bit, you know, Pat, you know, obviously he didn't give LeBron's people full access to the organization. I don't think Pat Riley regrets any of that because at the end of the day, I don't think Pat truly feels that those are valid reasons why LeBron left. In fact, by the time Pat made that speech about, oh, come back if you have the guts, I think Pat already knew at that time pretty damn good chance LeBron is leaving, right? Because the reports at that time were Riley couldn't even get a face-to-face with LeBron right after that season ended, that he was told, hey, if you want to talk to me, you talk to my agent. You talk to Rich Paul. Like, Pat Riley couldn't even get in a room one-on-one with LeBron James after 4 years and all they'd been through together. So I think Riley had a pretty good idea at that point. No matter what I say here today, no matter what kind of no matter what kind of coddling I give to this guy, no matter how much I beg and plead for him to come back, the writing is on the wall. I don't think Pat Riley looks back at that time, looks back at how that era ended, and has any serious regret over it. I don't. Now, does Pat Riley ever lie awake at night and think, man, imagine if LeBron had stayed here, signed a new long-term deal, and he had never left Miami, 2015 to 2018, how many more championships we could have won? The amazing runs we could have made through the NBA Finals. Does he think about what might have been? Sure. How do you not? When you're Riley, when you're the most ambitious executive on the planet, how do you not think of what might have happened if things went differently? But does he have any regrets over the way that situation transpired? I honestly doubt that. I think that if you look back at Pat Riley's tenure with the Miami Heat, I think the bigger regret than anything that played out with LeBron, and the biggest regret of Riley's tenure, and thankfully for him, you've had a nice happy ending and a resolution to this, right? But the way things went down with Dwayne Wade in the summer of 2016, I think that is by far the bigger regret, probably the biggest regret that Pat Riley has, right? I mean, the stories that you heard out of that one, that Pat wasn't showing Dwayne Wade any individual love, right? Was taking a very cold-hearted business approach, and Dwayne just wanted to deal with Mickey at that time. That things had cooled off with Pat. It wasn't until almost 2 years later at the funeral of, you know, Dwayne's beloved agent, Henry Thomas, that they shared a hug. And then a couple of months after that, D-Wade ends up getting traded back to Miami this past spring to, we assume, whether it's done now or if he plays another year, he's going to finish his career in Miami. At the end of the day, they made that right, but you had about a year and a half of a very tough, awkward, icy relationship between Riley and Wade. Dwayne Wade, unlike LeBron James, had been with Pat for 13 years at that time. Dwayne Wade had been a part of three championships over 13 years, greatest draft pick Pat Riley had ever made. I think Pat has much bigger regrets over the summer of 2016 with Dwayne than the summer of 2014 with LeBron. Other regrets for Riley. Could it be the four-year, $98 million contract he gave to Hassan Whiteside 2 summers ago? I don't think Pat loses any sleep over that one, because I think Pat looks back at that and says, I didn't really have any other choice at that time. That was something we had to do. Now, maybe there was a miscalculation over A, how good Hassan Whiteside really was, and B, how important the center position was going to be moving forward, right? Because at that time, that didn't seem like a terrible move. I don't think Pat says, man, that's beyond my control. I shouldn't have done that. Shame on me for giving Hassan that contract. I don't think he regrets it. Maybe he wishes it went down a different way, but I don't think he regrets the way that that went down. Somebody writes in, drafting Justice Winslow over Devin Booker in 2015. That's a second-guessing thing again. Michael Beasley over Russell Westbrook and Kevin Love in 2008. Answer me this. Did anybody in that 2008 draft, and not people who are looking back on it 10 years later, did anybody that summer say, you can't take Michael Beasley in the top two? You've got to take Russell Westbrook. That's the guy you've got to draft. You've got to take Kevin Love. That's your guy. That's all about hindsight. Yeah, 10 years later, you look back on it and say, woof, drafting Michael Beasley second overall. And for that matter, drafting Derrick Rose first overall, like the Chicago Bulls did that summer, and like the Heat would have done if they had gotten that number one pick. Nobody could have foreseen how that went down at the time. Nobody could have foreseen that, hey, there are a couple players here that are going to end up being far better, long-tenured NBA guys than the two guys who went one and two that summer. That was just an unpredictable, very bad draft at the top. I don't know if Riley looks back at that as a regret. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. He didn't even have the stones to even talk to Pat Riley. Talking about Dwayne Wade, he thinks he's above everybody else. That is why LeBron is a pre-Madonna punk ass, texter writes. And on that team after 2014, you know, when the Heat lost to the Spurs in the finals, texter writes in, that team wasn't winning any more championships. Are you sure about that, though? Are you sure about that? Especially when 2 years after that, LeBron James wins a championship with Cleveland, with Tyronn Lue as his head coach. Yeah, he did have Kyrie, who was big in that final series, and Kevin Love actually made a gigantic defensive play in that game seven. But he got that championship in Cleveland in 2016. You don't think the Heat could have won that title? Although Chris Bosh would have had the blood clots by that time. But I feel like Riley and Spoelstra could have gotten another championship, at least one more championship out of that group. In fact, they at least, if LeBron had played in Miami this past summer, I'm not saying they beat Golden State, but they could have given Golden State a better fight than they did. We're going to talk with Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel when we come back. So much stuff to get to, my friends, in the NBA. Not only with LeBron speculation, where does he go this summer? Kawhi Leonard, very interesting case because Kawhi, if he wants to, can really try to exercise his leverage. If he really wants to go to Los Angeles, he can make things hard for anybody else who bids on him. Because if he makes his intentions known, I will only sign a long-term deal with LA. He can try to scare away other teams from making a bid, but San Antonio absolutely does not want to help the Los Angeles Lakers create a super team. So that's going to be very interesting. And what can the Miami Heat accomplish? So Ira Winderman is going to join us next, but
Radio.com. Radio.com.
It begins before my mother starts. About my friends, about to go and
I got a lot of questions before free agency begins July 1st, before the NBA draft coming up this week. We go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline, bringing our friend Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Ira Winderman is powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Ira, how you doing on this fine Tuesday evening, sir?
Still trying to figure out the NBA draft and trying to figure if at some point in the night Pat Riley is going to surprise us. And it would not surprise me if they wind up with at least something on Thursday, still with free agency, like you were mentioning, being the most important factor in this.
So if the Heat are able to find a way into the draft, could it be first round, maybe second round to try and grab a piece? How could you see that playing out this week?
You know, it's interesting, Alex, because on one hand, you can buy a second-round pick. They're always available. Mm-hmm. Last year, the Clippers bought two of them. The Warriors have bought one in each of the last 2 years, so it happens. But I'm almost wondering, when Pat Riley basically has said, you know, that there's no untouchables here, if there might not be an actual trade where you don't have to buy a pick, but actually just trade players to get into the first round. The Heat have been scouting every agency workout. They've been at every group workout. They're looking at players. That might be an interesting way to try to shake things up a little bit, maybe get off some money because of that also, if someone else likes their pieces. So, yeah, I'm keeping a real eye out on that. I think the one thing, the message that he can't send out now is we're going to be passive. So I think there will be a certain amount of aggression, whether it comes Thursday in the draft, whether it comes as the July 1 start of free agency.
Now, for most of the beat writers out there, Ira, the teams have draft picks. They know what number their team is slated to pick. I know trades can always happen, so they kind of have an idea what to write about, targeting certain players, looking at certain ranges. So does that make your job harder, not knowing what might happen on draft night, or does it kind of make it easier because maybe you don't have to scout as many of these draft picks?
Well, I think you have to look at what their area of needs are. Like, I can't fathom them getting aggressive for a big man. There's some really good big men at the start of the draft. Mo Bamba, obviously DeAndre Ayton's going to go number one. Wendell Carter. I don't see the Heat in that range, nor when you have Whiteside and you have Olynyk and you have Adebayo. And honestly, even if you trade any one of the three, you still have enough. So I don't see them going big. I think dynamic wing, whether that dynamic wing is a guard, whether that dynamic wing is a forward, that's what they need, and I think that's the direction they'll look at. I think that's what will be available in the range they might be able to trade into. I think there's some player, whether it's, you know, a dynamic small forward, maybe even a point guard, not that it would be Colin Sexton, but someone like that. I like Holiday from UCLA. As just, yes, they don't have a backup point guard behind Goran Dragic anyway. I think the style he plays would work with the Heat. That probably would be a late teen 20s pick anyway. So I think that's where they could make a move. The crazy thing, Dono, is this. In some permutations because of contracts, they won't be able to complete the trade until July 6th.
Because
they'll have to wait for the new, you know this from football, the new cap year, the new money that you could spend and throw in trades. And I even asked the Heat, I said, look, if you trade for a player in the draft, and Woj is going to tell us anyway, will you let us know which player you're getting? And they said they can't, because you literally cannot mention the name of another team's player. He would be their player in theory until you complete the trade. So, Alex, you know these awkward moments. We saw it during the draft 3 years ago. Shabazz Napier is drafted by the Heat in 4 years ago in 2014, and he puts on a Charlotte Hornets hat. Then the Heat make a trade. So we're probably saying that Shabazz Napier wore that Hornets hat for maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You literally could have someone who the Heat wind up trading for at the draft wearing the other team's cap for 2 weeks. That's from the 21st until July 6th. We'll all know who he belongs to. He won't even be able to attend the Heat Summer League in Sacramento. That'll be completed by July 6th, and we'll have to join the Heat on the fly for their Summer League in Las Vegas. So it's going to be very twisted. Obviously, it'll get out. The player can say, I know I'm going to the Heat. I'm looking forward to it. The agent could say, I told him don't worry about reporting to Indiana. We know he's going to be traded. But it's going to be a very interesting night because the Heat, the player the Heat pick, you might not know about at the moment. You might not know about it in that hour. And maybe we won't know about it for 2 weeks. The only way you'll know it's not a Heat player is if he signs with his team. Mm. In that case, he can't be traded for at least a month. So then you'll get better insight into that.
Ira, I had some thoughts on an interesting conversation that Hawk and Crowder had earlier today about Pat Riley and the way that he handled LeBron's final year, final couple weeks, couple months in Miami. Hawk thinking that Riley should have coddled him a little bit more, should have, you know, been a little bit more accommodating to his requests of his entourage and his family, having more run on the organization, should have in that postseason presser, been a little bit more complimentary rather than essentially challenging him to come back and play with the Heat again. Do you think Pat Riley has any regrets for the way that summer went down, the way he handled things anyway?
Well, you know, it's funny because I heard the start of your show, which to me is always must listening, even if I'm at a game. And even what you mentioned, Alex, that it might have been done by then. That
right.
When Pat Riley talked about hidden agendas and emojis and smiling faces, we all might have known, he probably knew then, that he was fighting the uphill battle and he might as well at least retain his dignity. You know, it's like that girlfriend you go back after two or three times and then you realize it's a lost cause anyway because you see her out on a date with someone else. I think that's how Pat Riley felt. I got to tell you, I think it gets underreported the degree that the Heat did bend. Hmm. The amount of access that some of LeBron's people did have. The way the Heat went out of their way to be as accommodating as possible to both LeBron's wife and children, LeBron's mother extending the family tree, LeBron's people around him, whether it was Maverick Carter and his floor access, Randy Mims and his locker room access, they did a lot. Of course, everyone always wants more. And it's sort of like that spoiled child. Where do you draw the line? You get your kid a used car. Maybe you get your kid a new car. Are you getting your kid the Lamborghini? Where are you going to draw the line? I think Pat Riley drew the line where he felt, if I go any further, I lose the rest of the team. Remember, at the time, he still had Dwayne Wade. He still had Chris Bosh. He still had other star players. He had the chance for Ray Allen to come back. And so if you turn the entire team over, are you Pat Riley? Are you the Heat culture anymore? Or are you someone who's simply kowtowing like Dan Gilbert did? And I think Dono, you'd agree with this. No matter what happened through this, Pat Riley has always remained a respected NBA presence, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, has Dan Gilbert ever been a respected NBA presence?
No, certainly not since the Comic Sans letter. I didn't really have too many and you're right in this sense, because I never felt, oh, I really respect this Dan Gilbert before the Comic Sans. I never thought about the guy. Then after the Comic Sans, I feel like the guy's been a laughingstock ever since.
And the things he did and the way he went out of the way, even now we're seeing coaches who are favorable to LeBron getting raises and being moved on the bench and other guys being moved out, you know, in sort of Cleveland's last gasp way of trying to impress LeBron. Also, they probably will draft for LeBron. They probably will trade for LeBron. not knowing if LeBron is coming back anyway. I think at a certain point, I respect Pat Riley for keeping, and this is not about Pat Riley's dignity. This is about the dignity of the Miami Heat organization and the Miami Heat culture, that you have to draw the line at a certain point. That there were times the Heat stayed over in a city because they knew LeBron wanted that. They had their Thanksgiving at LeBron's house because LeBron wanted that. And there were other times they said to themselves, we're a business and a professional organization, and we also have a culture to adhere to. So I think in retrospect, number one, more than anything, he knew LeBron was gone by the time that he sort of put out those things anyway.
Right.
And number two, he knew that LeBron was not going to be the last player ever to play for the Miami Heat. And if you sell out that culture to that degree, and if a LeBron can get anything and everything he wants, then what? Then who's next? Then what happens to the next guy who comes in? What happens when you talk to Hayward or Durant or whoever it is this summer? And what if they say, okay, well, LeBron got five parking spots. He got his top people in the locker room. He got these 17 spots, you know, courtside for his people. Two of his guys were allowed to stand in and be stenographers during huddles. Eventually, you reach a point is, well, I want the LeBron treatment. You did that for him. And then when you say no, they go, well, I guess you don't want me as much as you wanted LeBron. Again, you have to take the long view of a culture and a franchise. This is not Cam Cameron setting up his culture. This is not Joe Philbin setting up his culture. This is someone who has a proven track record that when he says he wants to do it this way, you can say, okay, he's also got a bunch of rings.
And this is another summer, Ira, that's going to be full, and already has been full, of LeBron James drama and speculation. It's only going to ramp up when July 1st comes around. Where do you expect LeBron to take his talents this summer?
I still think Los Angeles sets up best. It's very interesting what's going on here. All of a sudden, everyone's coming out for LeBron and saying he doesn't need another championship. He's done enough. He's not going to be justified or made who he is by how many rings he has, which I think does ring very true even to LeBron. I think he wants to be where he wants to be, live the lifestyle he wants to be, have his family in a place they want to be, avoid having to deal with the weather in Cleveland, and even the hometown pressures that he had. He took care of his hometown. He gave him that championship. I still think LA makes the most sense. I know Woj just come out and said that Chris Paul is not leaving Houston and instead trying to bring LeBron there.
Right.
I don't think LeBron was ever dependent or contingent on Chris Paul. I think Chris Paul last year said, I am wedding myself to James Harden, and it worked out really well except for the injury, and I think LeBron charts his own path. I still think there is a chance for LeBron, Kawhi, and Paul George in L.A., and to me, that lets LeBron reset the clock to 2010. That was the last time he had the big three that he wanted. Even the Kevin Love Kyrie thing, Kyrie was sort of there. I don't think it was necessarily the big three he wanted, although we did get a championship within two seasons that way anyway. So if LeBron has a chance for a big three, I don't think it's as much which big three as him knowing I am going in with two other dynamic NBA players. When that happened for me my second year in Cleveland, we won a championship. When it happened to me 2 out of 4 years in Miami, we won a championship. The Lakers, to me, more than Embiid and Ben Simmons, who are still growing as players, the Lakers can give him veteran talent right now.
Now, explain to me what has to happen for Kawhi to get to L.A., because I know, obviously, San Antonio does not want to send him to Los Angeles, especially if it means a super team with LeBron and potentially Paul George. But I also know that if Kawhi really wants to put their feet to the fire, he can try and kill their leverage by saying, and he hasn't done it yet, but he can say, I will only sign long-term with L.A., which could scare away some other teams. Do you think that's the direction we could be going in?
Sure, Donald. Let's look at the situations. Boston Celtics certainly have enough to trade for Kawhi Leonard. Okay, they could start with Jaylen Brown and Rozier and oodles of good draft choices, including one from the Sacramento Kings. But what happens if a Kawhi says, you know what, you can trade for me, but I'm leaving in 2019, which is also when Kyrie Irving can leave.
Ooh.
So all of a sudden, Danny Ainge's whole thing could blow up, you know, 2 years after he put the whole thing together. That's the Boston scenario. Right now, the Sixers could probably make a very attractive offer of Dario Saric, the number 10 pick, Markelle Fultz, and probably Robert Covington for Kawhi. Kawhi could say, okay, I ain't staying in Philadelphia. I never really wanted to be there. All of a sudden, Philadelphia is then without a first-round pick, without Saric, without whatever Markelle Fultz could turn into. They have nothing. So I think Kawhi can threaten his way away from those two possibilities. So then you get back to the Western Conference. Again, will they accept a deal of Sacramento, maybe to Phoenix? So the point is you have a fiduciary responsibility as the leader of the Spurs to get as much quality back for your player. And don't tell me, well, you're trading him to the West. You're not trading him to the Warriors. That even if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, if you want to win a championship in the short term, you still have to beat the Warriors anyway. So I think if you can get a return back of starting with Brandon Ingram, and continuing with Kyle Kuzma, maybe the Lakers' later pick, I think it's 25 in the first round this year, maybe a future pick, maybe even take Lonzo Ball and reroute him somewhere else, I think you'd have to look at that. So if you do a deal like that with the Lakers, you're not touching your cap space. Then you still would have about $60 million left to split between LeBron and Paul George. Probably can create a little more if you need to, and you can make that deal work. All of a sudden, you get Brook Lopez to come back on an exception deal or something like that, or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who has the same agent as LeBron does, and you can make a deal like that work where you could wind up with a lineup possibly of Lopez and LeBron and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and yeah, you'd be in good shape.
Now, I'm sure the Heat would at least throw their hat into the race for Kawhi. Yeah. Not that they could put together the most attractive package, but what do you think would be the most enticing package of players Pat Riley could offer to San Antonio?
I think the one, and this is not mine, ESPN put this out a month or 2 months ago even when the speculation started of Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo. So let's take those four out of the Heat equation.
Right.
What we'd be left with, in my view, and the listeners might differ on who starts and who doesn't, probably would be Hassan Whiteside at power forward, Hassan Whiteside at center, rather, James Johnson at power forward, Kawhi Leonard at small forward, Deion Waiters at shooting guard, and for now, Tyler Johnson at point guard. So let me go over that again. Whiteside, James Johnson, Kawhi Leonard, Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson. Donald, where does that get you in the East?
Third, fourth place.
Okay. I'm just saying. So as much as, oh, they should trade for Kawhi, that's all well and good. But I think a lot of these Heat fans are, and then they're going to trade Whiteside and his salary for player X, Y, or Z. So I would say this. If you make that Kawhi trade, I think even Kawhi would say to you, okay, what are you doing next? You're on the clock. Same thing as you would tell the other teams. I could opt out or I could become a free agent in 2019. So the question becomes then, do you risk all of that if you're the Heat and give it all up? And you know what? Maybe you do. Because maybe you say to yourself, we weren't going to re-sign Goran when he could opt out in a year anyway. We're going to have a tough decision whether to give an extension due, I believe, by around October 31st this year for Justice Winslow. We'd face a rookie-scale decision with Bam Adebayo in a couple of years. So maybe the only long-term piece you're giving up there anyway is Josh Richardson. So maybe that would be the kind of deal where even if Kawhi says no, and let's face it, it's less than we're talking about with the Sixers or the Celtics. Maybe you do pull the trigger if you're Pat Riley and then tell your entire personnel staff and Andy Ellisberg and Nick Harrison, okay, we've got to go find another player. We're on the clock between now and the end of the season. We've got to get a solid number two or number one around him. Go.
Last thing here, I'm dying to know, how much World Cup does Ira Winderman watch? Because I know that you are a versatile fan of many sports.
I'm not watching any,
really?
Dono, because I am still so upset about the whole U.S. situation that I just don't. I used to look at brackets and, okay, and best third place points and differential and how can they get to the second round. And I know there have been fantastic games going on and the messy mist and some of these great upsets by teams. And, of course, you and I and our favorite Iceland team and our favorite announcer that I'm sure you're playing all of his calls. Do you remember the name?
Gumi Ben is the name of the Icelandic
announcer.
Right
there. So I get all that. I will watch the later rounds, but I just can't tell you just how upset I am amid the news that the World Cup is coming in part to the U.S. in 8 years, that it's going to be our tournament. It just feels so empty. I haven't picked sort of my other team. You know,
gotcha.
I probably would be Mexico and what the Tri have done just because we've seen some of their games down here.
And they've got Ira, the biggest win of the Cup so far. Beating Germany was massive.
Right. And I'm just saying, and I know what it means to that country, and I know that in CONCACAF with the U.S. playing them so much and them going through 39 different coaches on the way to qualifying for this, you know, what it means to them. But I'm still stung by that. I still can't fathom when I watch and see some of these countries that come up, and I understand from different groups in Tunisia and other places, certain teams have to make it. But when I see what's there for CONCACAF and what's going on, it's still – I'll get over it, Dono. It's going to take me at least another week or so. Believe me, by the time we get to the quarters or the semis and at a pool play, I'll be over it. But for now, I just find it very challenging that this country could be where they are right now when it comes to the world soccer stage.
You want to follow this man on Twitter at Ira Heatbeat and check out his work in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Ira Winterman, thank you so much.
Okay, next time we'll catch up with both Bones Jones, and also you didn't ask me about the Panthers trade, so that's coming up on my
Only because I'm talking to Randy Moeller in about 40 minutes, so I wanted to keep this time mostly to basketball, but I do want to get your thoughts on that at a later time.
I mean, and it was a fascinating dynamic, so I will be listening to see exactly how you approach it with Red Deer. Thanks,
Donna. I appreciate it. Good stuff there from Ira. And I think the message Ira sent there with the World Cup stuff is he's a great American. If America is not in, Ira is not watching. I respect him as a man of principle. The Alex Dono Show continues next year on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
She snapped. Thanks again to Ira Winterman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel for joining us there. In addition to all the basketball talk, Ira alluded to something about the Florida Panthers trade today for Mike Hoffman. We are going to discuss the trade from every angle and talk a little bit about the upcoming NHL draft this Friday with Red Deer Randy Moeller tonight at 7:20. But so this Mike Hoffman story, so hockey-wise, there's no question the Florida Panthers, I thought, got a bargain for a very effective forward, right? The Panthers today... So Hoffman was shipped from the San Jose Sharks, who he was a member of for 2 hours and 18 minutes today after the Sharks acquired him from Ottawa. He was a Shark for 2.5 hours, and then they send him to the Panthers along with a 2018 seventh-round draft pick in exchange for the Florida Panthers' 2019 second-round pick, a 2018 fourth-round selection, and a 2018 fifth-round draft choice. This is a player, Mike Hoffman, who has scored 20 or more goals in each of the past 4 seasons. That's a valuable goal scorer. I've watched this guy play in person. Impressive, impressive player. And hockey-wise, it's an unbelievable move. There is some controversy, though, behind this. And this story to me is so bizarre because allegations against Hoffman don't actually involve Hoffman. They allegedly involve his fiance, which I think brings up a lot of questions. And I know we've had a lot of these debates before in this town when Miko Grimes was here with Brent Grimes. So if any of this stuff is even true, how much credence do you give allegations that are not actually against the player, but against the player's fiance? Should you hold that against the player? It's very complicated here, but I'll give you some quotes courtesy of Bleacher Report and courtesy of ESPN here. From Bleacher Report first, the Ottawa Senators traded forward Mike Hoffman to the San Jose Sharks, who then traded him to the Florida Panthers on Tuesday amid allegations that his fiance, Monica Carrick, harassed Senators defenseman Erik Karlsson's wife online. Shamini Yogaratnam of the Ottawa Citizen reported last week that Melinda Karlsson, the wife of Erik Karlsson, and if you don't remember the tragedy that her and Erik suffered, I'll remind you of that in a moment, but Melinda Karlsson filed an order of protection against Carrick, the fiance of Mike Hoffman, alleging that Carrick harassed her for months on the internet and even wished her unborn child dead. The Carlsons had a stillborn child back in March. Melinda Karlsson also alleged that Carrick wrote that someone should, quote, take out Carlson's legs to end his career. Hoffman, meanwhile, Mike Hoffman vehemently denied the accusations and said he and Carrick support the Carlsons. Quote, there is a 150% chance that my fiance Monica and I are not involved in any of the accusations that have been pursued that are coming our way. Despite Hoffman's denial, his agent, Robert Hooper, acknowledged that the Senators would likely need to trade either Karlsson or his client. Quote, what we've indicated to the Senators GM is that it would be very difficult for both parties. Melinda Karlsson believes they're true, which regardless is going to clearly Melinda Karlsson believes they're true. Which regardless is going to create a lot of awkwardness and a lot of unpleasantness and just a lot of distractions that no team should have to endure. The Senators heeded Hooper's advice, and Hoffman is now set to resume his playing career in Florida. Strong culture down here now, and I think by their wives and girlfriends. We have a strong culture down here. Talking with Mike and all the parties, that it will work out to our benefit. So, on, like, call me a homer if you want to, but for all the time that we have spent in the last several years praising Dale Tallon for being one of the best at what he does when it comes to being a talent evaluator, an executive, and you have to consider so many things in that job from a hockey standpoint and a chemistry standpoint, because that's been a big thing for the Panthers. Over the last three-plus years, it's been a big thing trying to get a cohesive, strong locker room. That is something this Panthers organization does think about. And, you know, I know that people say, well, Dono, what happened a couple of years ago when they fired Gallant and Tom Rowe was promoted or taken out of the GM office to put in a head coach? You remember that a lot of that stuff happened when Dale Tallon allegedly had some of his power stripped away. So Dale Tallon is the guy who has made the fewest mistakes with this club since he's been here. Shouldn't I give Dale Tallon some benefit of the doubt here that he's done his homework on this and that he didn't just go out of his way today to trade for a toxic player with a toxic fiance who cannot possibly work out and doesn't deserve to be on an NHL team? I've got to think that Tallon did his due diligence and decided, you know what, there's a lot of smoke here, but these allegations are something that, you know, we're not so sure if all of this stuff is completely true, or did it go down the way that the wife of Erik Karlsson said it went down, and we feel like this isn't going to be a distraction in Florida the way it was a distraction in Ottawa. Shouldn't I give Dale Tallon some benefit of the doubt there when you're talking about something that not the player, but the fiance of the player was accused of doing? Should that prohibit you from going out and acquiring a guy who has scored 20 or more goals each of the past four seasons? That should we be at a point where there are allegations against the fee, as horrible as they were, right? If true, that's some pretty brutal stuff. But should you avoid going out and acquiring a very good, effective goal scorer, somebody who can make your team better, because there are allegations that probably can't be proven 100% against his fiance? I think Dale Tallon did something today that is going to help this team. Texter writes in on the World Cup, Dono, I lost respect for Ira when he said he'll root for our arch rival Mexico. Can't do that. Wow. I just think it's interesting that Ira Winderman said that he has a hard time watching any of these games because he was all in for the United States and the United States is not there. I find myself, to be honest, I'm really not rooting for any team. I know I said before the Cup started that I'd be rooting for Croatia. I took a step back from that only because first couple of match days in this World Cup, I had so much fun just watching the games, kicking my feet up, you know, watching some of the crazy results, watching Cristiano Ronaldo go ham on Spain after paying his tax debt, scoring that hat trick, watching Lionel Messi choke in his matchup with Argentina. You know, watching Germany fall to Mexico, I'm having so much fun watching these games that I've decided I don't have to be all in with the team. I don't have to root for any specific squad. I'm just having so much fun watching these games. And yeah, 4 years from now, do I hope Italy's in? Do I hope the United States is in? Absolutely. I don't want to have to go through this again with my team or my teams not being in the World Cup. That's a painful, painful, awful thing. But I'm enjoying these games. I'm enjoying the competition so much. I am still watching, and I am still captivated by it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.